Yeah, I already told the speakers of today, this is a session I am personally most excited about, high expectations. Why? Because when we talk about sustainability and technology, the assumption is often that it's about solutions for the global north, and often the solutions originate from the global north. But can these solutions then also help tackle issues in the global south? And how can we contribute to develop locally sensitive solutions? Two researchers from the Humboldt Institute for Society, for Internet and Society, share the insights from their project Sustainability Entrepreneurship, Welcome, and Global Digital Transformation. And this is a project that is active in 10 cities across Africa, Asia, and Americas. And so without further ado, I'll just give the word to you, Georg von Richthofen, senior researcher from this research group that I just introduced, and Ali Aslan Gumushai, head of the research group. Thank you.
Die fragen mich, ob sie mit meinen Kindern WhatsApp machen können, weil
das Hallo. Doof ist.
Ich wollte mal fragen, ob ich das Mikro noch klauen darf.
Ach ja, klar. Gut, dass ich noch da bin, oder?
Ja.
Ich höre dich die ganze Zeit, alle
da drin. Hast du mich?
With my stomach on a different topic, which would be cool. It would be cool. Now, what I just wanted to say is, I mean, the HIC is a bit of a mouthful. We call ourselves HIC or HIC, as in the Humboldt Institute for Internet and Society. We are not the Humboldt who is the name giver of the Humboldt University. It's the other Humboldt, the Alexander von Humboldt, who was an explorer, which, by the way, is then linked to this topic. So yes, together with Georg, I'll present very briefly a bit the institute, the group, and then the one specific project. And we titled it Between Benin and Berlin. So for those of you who thought this is about Algeria, it is not, right? It's not between Berlin and Benin. We're not talking about the middle, right? We're not talking about the middle Mediterranean Sea. We're actually talking about work in Benin and other countries. But we thought an alteration might be quite nice. And what I think what is important about the HIC is that what we try is we try to integrate excellent research with impact, right? So we are in a way almost like a hybrid organization that tries to bring in academic research as well as impact and practice. And in Germany, there are actually quite a few of these institutes and institutions, whereas in the US and UK, you have more of these institutions that are a bit at the border between academia and practice. And that's where we also try to position ourselves. Thank you. So the HIC was founded in 2011. We generally claim, or not only claim, we say we're the first German research institute for Internet Society, because there are others who came after us, right? So being the first is something we cherish. But now we have over 70 people working in our institute on topics like AI, democracy and digitalization, global governance, etc., etc., like multiple topics in different programs and groups. And I also see some HIClers or former HIClers in the room. Who also worked with us. So different topic areas, and I think the intersection is generally digitalization and society. And in our research group, the IES, the Innovation, Entrepreneurship and Society Research Group, we try to focus on kind of the interconnection of three topic areas. The first area is innovation entrepreneurship, kind of the business side of things, right? So we are interested in how organizations engage innovatively with topic areas. The second one is in society. We try to engage with societal grand challenges, topics of societal interest. And then the third one is digitalization. So the work in our group is really kind of the business, entrepreneurship, innovation, digitalization, and society. And the interlinkage of these three is what we focus on in our group. I must say, I feel like walking behind this tree back and forth. It is a beautiful one, though. So this is the group. You can see here Georg. He was a year younger then. You also see others from the SET project. Christian is up there. There's Moritz. Anke-Christine is there. So this is our research group in The Hague. And if you're interested in this work, we have right now, actually, I think the deadline was yesterday. We're looking for a student assistant, for instance. But if you write in your application Bits and Bäume, we grant you an additional day, right? So right here, exclusively, you can apply for a position a day even after on a project on platform alternatives. So what do we actually work on? And this is my final slide, and then I'll hand over to Georg to zoom in on one of these projects, right? So the HIC, the EES group, with this team, works on quite a diverse range of topics. And we try to categorize them, and obviously any categorization is artificial somewhat, but one of the areas is collaboration and openness. And I think this is a topic we have heard in the reset report also being mentioning that global topics need to be engaged with in a coordinated and collective fashion. So this is about openness, it's about bringing together different groups, different actors. For instance, the Open Next, so every DOT effectively is one project, so one third-party funded project with a project leader and so on working on this topic area. Open Next, effectively, I mean, very briefly put, we all know about open software, etc. What about open hardware? And especially in times of COVID-19, if you think about 3D printers, for instance, back then, how do you create open hardware that can be used globally quickly? Right. So that's a project on this. AI and knowledge work is a project that Georg also leads. So he leads actually two projects at the same time. I'm not sure whether you do it Monday, Tuesday, or Monday morning, or day and night, maybe day, one project and night, the other project. But so AI and knowledge work is about the future of work. Right, and one of the projects there we, for instance, work on is we ask, how does AI shape the future of work representation? Right, not just work, not just managers, but actually worker representation. And then the last one is on people analytics. SET is the one which Georg will introduce in a moment. We also work on social innovation and social entrepreneurship, questions about how do organizations bring in different values, right, meanings. So the business side and the sustainability side, or the business side and the social side, how do you integrate them in an organization, is that. Last section, platforms and ecosystems, is really about digital platforms, and maybe focusing a bit more on like a third way, an alternative perspective on platforms. So between, simply put, between China and the US, what would be a European alternative to the platform economy? And the Alternative Platform Project just published a report a couple of weeks ago, and the Inca project is starting soon. And yeah, last two sentences on this. As you see, we try to be quite creative with the names. So Kiwi is Künstliche Intelligenz und Wissensarbeit, so that's the Kiwi part of it. Inca is the in von increasing, then corporate, and then I think accountability, that's where the Inca comes from. So we also come up with really nice names. And what the SET stands for and what is behind all that is now, Georg will talk about that next. And then we're looking forward to a conversation afterwards. Thank you.
I just wanted to hide it.
Sorry, one more slide. Sorry. I thought I'll just also point out a couple of publications, right? A bit of a glimpse into some of the publications that we have. One is a report that we published this year on the promises and perils of AI in social entrepreneurship, right? So we're wondering how do social ventures engage with AI, right? And maybe also we published normal kind of academic articles. This is an essay about desirable futures, where we effectively question academic thinking that is oftentimes very retrospective. So the brief kind of summary of this is most scholarship builds on data that exists, but if we can only do research on data that exists, we can only do retrospective research, right? And one argument in that piece is we say, if Trump throws a steak at us, I can analyze the steak. But if I want a vegetarian alternative and it doesn't exist, I cannot analyze it. Right, so how can we do prospective theorizing? How do we actually co-create futures as academics? Which is again very much linked to kind of our role as the HIC, right? What is the role of academia here? Is it just analyzing, or is it actually even co-creating? And if we talk about co-creating, what is then our actually right to do so as scholars? And the last hint is we also have digital lunch talks. This is one on grand challenges, digitalization and sustainability. Three more are coming up this year where we engage with these topics digitally with colleagues from quite a range of disciplines, so very interdisciplinary. And now I really hand over to Georg to talk about SET.
Okay, so welcome from my side as well. Glad to see so many faces and familiar faces here as well. So what I want to introduce to you is, first of all, the project Sustainability, Entrepreneurship and Global Digital Transformation. And then afterwards, I want to speak about one particular format that we think is quite relevant when it comes to kind of trying to make an impact in the Global South as researchers in the Global North without kind of just exposing your ideas on the Global South and so on. So, but just give you a bit of background about the project. So this project is funded by GIZ, Deutsche Gesellschaft für internationale Zusammenarbeit, on behalf of BMZ, the German Federal Ministry of for Economic Cooperation and Development. And maybe yeah, it's good to know a little bit about this. So basically what GIZ has been doing recently in the last 5 to 10 years is to think about development and cooperation work more through the lens of digitalization or digitalization. So they've been kind of having a lots of different projects, and at some point they came up with the idea to build so-called digital transformation centers. These are centers GIZ is kind of building in lots of different countries where they're already active, and these centers are very much focused on digitalization. So for let's say, and what they actually focus on in the different countries, that varies a lot, and that depends then of course always on what is kind of needed most, what their political partners prioritize at the time. So for instance, in Rwanda, they may be focused on entrepreneurship, whereas in other areas, it might be more focused on kind of building digital literacy. So it really varies a lot. And what kind of we have like the privilege to do is for this range of from November last year to April next year, we as HIC are something like the academic interface for 10 of these digital transformation centers, which have been fairly recently built, so they're kind of still looking for expertise and connections and so on. And so we basically try to provide that. And I think what's maybe important to know, so we are not, as HIC, we're not primarily only doing research, but we also have a lot of people who are very much engaged in science communication and transfer formats, which means essentially that we don't necessarily only conduct research, but we also try to think about creatively about ways to transfer knowledge, enable knowledge exchange, and so on. So concretely, what does that mean? So so we have lots of activities planned within these 1.5 years. So we have two research sprints, and I will introduce that concept in more depth in a minute. Then we have 11 stakeholder dialogues where we bring people together from academia, science, but also politics, business, and civil society to engage in dialogues on particular topics. We have studies, of course, and we have public events. Public events, the aim is always rather than have an in-depth conversation about topic, it's more like raising kind of awareness for a particular issue that might be relevant to civil society. So these are kind of the activities we have planned. And yeah, just to give you an idea about these, where these 10 transformation centers are based, so most of them are actually in Western Africa, so in Benin, Cameroon, Ghana, and Niger. But they are also we also cooperate with a DTC in Kenya and Morocco. And in addition, in Asia now this fall, we will be in Vietnam and Indonesia, and also next year Mexico. And what's also interesting is in Kosovo, for instance, there's this project where they have this former NATO base, which is more like coming from architectural viewpoint, kind of thinking about ways how to repurpose this NATO base area for civil society. And so today I will particularly actually focus on Ghana and in the context of the research sprint. Before that, it's maybe still worthwhile to kind of briefly explain how we, what our approach is in these cases. So how do we proceed, especially when it comes to kind of choosing topics that we actually study and formats. So we always start first of all by kind of identifying local needs. So this happens in close cooperation with the digital transformation centers on the ground. And because of course these have been built there and are active for several years already. And they're not only, let's say, GIZ consultants from Germany and so on, but they also have, of course, people who work there who are locals. And in addition, they work very closely with their political partners. So for instance, in the case of Benin, where we were in June, it's a Ministry for Digitization. So Benin actually has a Ministry for Digitization also for quite a while. So they kind of talk closely about the topics and priorities. And so we had like lots of different meetings where we talked to both the DTCs as well as their partners to kind of come up with the questions we want to address. And then next we would kind of co-creatively develop these questions and take into consideration, of course, what we have to offer at the HIC, what expertise we have, not only at the HIC maybe, but also at the network of centers, which are our partner institutes. And then last but not least, we would kind of think about formats to address these research questions and to develop knowledge for people that they can actually use in the end. Okay, so research sprints, so I think maybe it's hopefully obvious that research sprints is like a metaphor, so it's not like people actually sprinting, However, from a scientific perspective or from an academia point of view, it can actually a bit feel that way in terms of the timing we have. So the idea of research sprints was, we think, pioneered by like a partner institute of ours, Bergmann Klein, which is something like the HIC, but not in Berlin, but at Harvard. And so the idea is that the research projects often last several years, so can be like multi-year projects. And of course, that's something that is also necessary. We don't want to replace that, but oftentimes it just takes too long to kind of come up with until these, let's say, reports and studies and so on are published, right? And policymakers often need more timely feedback from researchers. So here the idea is, okay, research sprints are timely. So instead of, let's say, working on something several years, the goal is to generate knowledge within several weeks or months. And in addition, however, or at the same time, however, I think there's still, let's say, allow for more depth than like classical formats like conferences. So like being here today, this is great, of course, that we can have this hear about different sessions, discuss them, and so on. But then, of course, maybe after the conference, you think, oh, actually, this one talk, I got this nice idea, and then you would discuss it further. But then is not really a format, right, where you can follow up on this. So the idea about research sprints is that you have several sessions for 2 months, so people kind of bring in their perspectives, talk about it, and then they can also come back and take the discussion further. So second, they're international, interdisciplinary. So I think that's quite important, of course, to understand, especially issue related to digitization, sustainability from multiple perspectives. So it's not enough to have, say, when you talk about the gig economy, to have an economist, but we also want to have a sociologist, someone with a legal background, with a policy-making background, because all these perspectives also matter intensely when we when we talk about regulating such markets, for instance. And and of course, when it comes to especially issues like climate change, because it doesn't stop at borders, it's important to have people from different countries there as well. Last but not least, they are open and flexible. So the idea is that you start with a relatively broad topic that you then narrow more down over time. So then questions can be adapted over the time. And so can research foci and what kind of data you use and so on. So just to give you one example, already announced it. So we had this one research sprint in early summer on sustainable digital economies in Ghana. And here the goal was really to inform practitioners and policymakers in Ghana about the country's online gig work ecosystem. So when I talk about online gig work, so it doesn't, the gig work, often you think about maybe Uber drivers and so on. So that's not what is meant here. It's more meant something like you have a platform where people upload gigs. Let's say we need someone that helps us with the report, let's say graphic design, and then people can apply for this. So this online gig work kind of has, of course, a lot of potential in terms of that it can, let's say, people from all over the world can kind of get gigs that we upload here, let's say, in Germany. So that brings a lot of opportunities, but there are also still a lot of limitation to it. And those are some key facts. So overall, we had 11 fellows from 9 countries in 8 disciplines. And so they worked together online for most of the time. And in the end, we had the closing week in Ghana. And so we had a lot of different outputs. So we, in the closing week, basically the sprints engaged with conversations with local ministries, local innovation agencies, and so forth. And then also there was a stakeholder dialogue and event. And there will also be a study coming out of it. And I thought it's just maybe nice to show you a couple of images so that it becomes a bit more concrete. So here you can see one of the sessions that was online where the sprints met and engaged in their weekly session and discussed their progress and so on. This gives you a bit of an idea. So maybe also it's interesting to know kind of when you facilitate something like this, it's relatively complex, so it's not like giving an academic lecture or a seminar. So it's a very different dynamic. So it's really good to have not only academic guidance, but also have facilitators and moderators and have these roles also clearly separated to actually enable that. It's a proper proper research sprint. So then maybe some impressions from the closing week. So this was at the Labour Ministry in Accra in Ghana. So where basically the fellows presented the sprint results and discussed them with them and maybe also try to understand more the perspective of the policymakers, kind of why regulating this online gig work space is so complicated. And then towards the end of the week, Okay, the one more picture here of Ghana Innovation Hub, where people also engaged conversations. And then there was this multi-stakeholder dialogue, which essentially, where we often use something like the World Cafe method. So the idea is to have different tables which focus on different topics, but then the groups themselves are quite mixed. So there are often people like from academia, politics, business, and so on, so that they actually engage in a conversation. Again, here, of course, it's good to think a lot about facilitation and what you need to have get the conversation started and so on, and how to actually document findings in the meantime. And then towards the end of the stakeholder dialogues, the different tables would often then basically just present their findings to the other tables, which could basically discuss different topics. And then we document them and provide like a synthesis and document and share that with all participants. Last but not least, there was like a panel discussion. Here again, as I said before, the idea was not, let's say, to have like an in-depth discussion with like everyone, but there were like three panelists who brought in different perspectives, and just kind of more raise awareness in Ghana society for this issue. And I think it was actually quite a success, because we didn't have only this panel, but we live streamed it, but also it was afterwards then live streamed on radio in Ghana. So lots of people, hundreds of thousands of people heard about generally like the opportunity that comes along with online gig work, but also kind of some of the problems. Now, the topic here was, of course, when we talk today about sustainability here, obviously it was more focused on, like say, social sustainability, on decent work and so on. But in the overall project, we also have other topics focused. So our next research sprint will be on green tech in Vietnam. Maybe just some key findings. So what did the fellows learn? So first of all, there were a lot of legal uncertainties. So when it comes to online gig work, so the status of gig workers is often not clear. What does that mean or imply? It means, for instance, that they often, it's not clear whether they actually have a right to unionize. Moreover, for the government, it was often quite difficult to say, okay, how can we enforce minimal legal wage? Because it wasn't clear who's the employer. Is the employer, let's say, a person in Berlin who's uploading the gig to do the graphic design for a study, or is it the platform? So kind of the same discussion that we're having also in Europe about the status of these workers. Second, it was noted there were a lot of geographical challenges in terms of that the that there's a strong urban-rural divide, so that most of the profitable projects accumulate in metropolitan areas such as Accra, which is of course a pity, given that it would provide potentially a chance that people can kind of stay in their villages in smaller cities and kind of do this kind of work. However, there's this trend that that this is accumulating in metropolitan areas. Last but not least, there was also a big discussion about skill-related challenges. So what people noted is that you don't only, let's say, need the design, the graphic design skills, but you also need these kind of self-management skills, entrepreneurial skills. You need kind of be able to navigate the platform, know how to find gigs, how to kind of promote yourself, create a profile that then it kind of is in, looks in a way that people will actually say, oh, I want to give that task to that person or not. So a lot of skills involved, which at this time are sometimes still lacking on the one hand. And on the other hand, that was another issue, is that often workers didn't have like a clear picture of what skills are actually valued in these online labor markets. So what skills are maybe valued not only now, but also in 2 years, so they can adjust in the meantime and acquire these skills. Okay, so that's something I mentioned briefly. So the next research sprint, we will start next month, actually, on the 11th of October. And so it will, again, take place mostly online, but there will be a closing week in Vietnam. And here the question is really very much focused on green technology entrepreneurship. So basically, in Vietnam, it's a country which is extremely affected by climate change due to rising sea levels, typhoons, and so on. So they really have to kind of make this energy transition, and there are a lot of reports coming out these days and kind of looking at priorities. And one big priority for Vietnam is green tech, to make the transition both in transport but also the energy sector and so on. However, I mean, Vietnam is a communist country, so a lot, for instance, in energy, there's like a state-owned enterprise which almost controls 100% of the energy market, which makes innovation, of course, a lot more complicated than, let's say, in France or Germany or so on. And so therefore, like, there's a question of kind of what obstacles do green tech entrepreneurs currently face? On the one hand, on the other hand, from the kind of investor side, what factors promote or inhibit investment in green tech startups? So these are kind of the questions which are very dear to the heart of the people who we are collaborating with in Vietnam at the moment. And so we will again have, we do the sprint, then have a multi-stakeholder dialogue and a public events. So we will present the findings at the Green Economy Forum exhibition in 2022 in Ho Chi Minh City on the 30th of November. So basically, and having something like this in mind, of course, is also helpful for the fellows to have a clear goal and they can actually something they can focus on. So that's something. And last but not least, what I wanted to mention also is how can we, in a way, kind of scale this knowledge that we kind of collect in all these different places and these different transformation centers, and how can we kind of provide it in a way, let's say, to also maybe other digital transformation centers which are not in Vietnam but maybe have similar conditions and so on and similar problems. And then what this one idea we had is to kind of create a hub for digitalization project descriptions. So the idea is to have this like a place where you can basically chronicle cases, let's say, at the intersection of digitalization and sustainability, and so that people can kind of share insights and learn from each other. And we currently actually have an open call, so if you're interested in that, so just Google knowledge exchange digitalization or take a picture. And so for the first cases, there's also some incentive involved. So that's one idea we have also then to kind of document the findings in addition to having studies and panel discussions and live streams and so on. So this was just some input. So again, I think this research sprint format can be really interesting if you want to kind of avoid just kind of, let's say, flying to a place and just holding a presentation, but collaboratively both exchanging and generating knowledge. And we look forward to discussion, and we have, I think, 10 more minutes for Q&A. Thank you very much.
Who wants to ask a question? Yeah.
Thank you so much. That was super interesting. I'm definitely going to look at the project. I'm just wondering, the transfer of knowledge you gather to the specific region or regions, the different ones, you're probably going to look at entrepreneurship, how you can actually change the education, entrepreneurship education, how you're going to include the aspect of maybe purpose or sustainability. I'm just wondering how or in which ways you are going to basically, like all the gatherings you make, turn them back again to your collaboration partners.
I'll take the easy part to start, and if you want to chip in, then I'll hand over to Georg. I think the key thing is, like with these projects, we change what it means to be an academic, right? So normally academia is very distant. You go there, you have a question, et cetera, et cetera. This is speedy, but it's also actually the role of the academic becomes that of a moderator. So we come with expertise on digitalization. We have certain values as well, but actually we go in the field and are quite open towards seeing their problems, right? So it's not that we come there with our predefined problems, but we say, so what are your problems? And then we use the toolkits we have. So in a way, I guess, what do we use? We use our human capital, our knowledge. We use our social capital, our network. So we are part of a network of centers of over 100 inter-institutes. We use our financial capital. We have some resources as well. And then I guess we use our cultural capital. We motivate people on the ground also to pursue certain things. That's, I guess, the generic answer. But maybe, Georg, you want to continue on that?
Yes, so maybe it's a good question. I think we had the same discussion after the talk before about the reset report. So now the report is done, but what actually now happens with it, how do policy makers and so on learn about it? And I think in this project we have the advantage that we have these kind of these formats like the stakeholder dialogues and the events already built into the Antrag, so into the grant agreement. So actually basically when we go to Mexico, we will next year we will have the results of the sprint and of a study and discuss it in the stakeholder dialogue with policymakers and have this public event. And I think the good thing is that there are these digital transformation centers, and let's say now we go back in March next year, but the DTCs are not going anywhere. So they're still there, and for them it's one of their, let's say, three key resources. Whenever they discuss a topic, they say, okay, well, we have this report on this topic, and another report on another topic. And so basically they can refer to it. So I think that's a bit of an advantage that we have in this project. The transfer formats are already built into the grant agreement. Thank you.
We also have online. Oh, okay. Sorry. My name is Alejandra. I'm from Colombia. I'm an ecologist, so not that into entrepreneurship. I have two questions. One is regarding a little bit what she said. Is are you going to monitor how, or for the future, how these stakeholder dialogues evolve, or if they get really into a policy change, or are you going to monitor that in one way? And another question is regarding language. You are in different parts, so I wanted to know what languages are you talking? Is this all English-based? Does this create a filter for participation?
Thank you for the questions. Maybe first of all about languages. So given that the fellows come from lots of different places, you can see as so often in academia, then the go-to language is English. So people engage in English. However, so now for instance, when we do the sprint in Vietnam, there were also a lot of applicants from Latin America, especially Mexico. So what we now do is we form two groups. Basically so that the people can also engage in Spanish, because there were also some who, let's say, are not so fluent in English and maybe feel more comfortable kind of contributing perspective in that. And so for instance, when we were in Benin, because it's such a Francophone country, so we also, for instance, decided that we actually write the study in French, because otherwise no one would actually read it and benefit from it. So we're very lucky that we have a scholar from Canada, who's originally from Niger, and he is now in Ottawa, so he's both fluent in French and English, and so basically we could discuss and everything, but then he will write ultimately the study in French. But in addition, we will do an executive summary in English, so that people who don't speak French can actually also at least get the gist of it. And what was the first question? Right, and yeah, and that's maybe a big issue. Maybe Ali can say something about this, but it's also a big discussion in science in general, I think, right? How to monitor that.
Yeah, and so maybe I think, again, what is our role? Again, it's changing in terms of like from what the normal academic is doing. I think we are not just moderators, but actually orchestrators, right? So when Georg says we actually commission some of the studies, right? Because we're saying we are not the expert. We don't speak the language, but also the local language. But we know, let's say, the system, and we enable others to work further. So even with the case studies, like we kind of try to be the platform for others, right? So in terms of then like output and so on, I mean, the GIZ has certain KPIs, right, in terms of reach, etc. We will have a follow-up probably project with the GIZ. But I think what's also key is for us, like when we write the proposal, we try to be only a piece of the puzzle. And the puzzle should also continue without us, right? And so the GIZ, as Georg said, will stay there in these different centers and have an institutionalized presence, right? And we like, I mean, before in the previous life I was a consultant, right? So you fly in, you go in for a week, and then you're out again, right? And that's obviously, it's not very healthy, right? And so we see ourselves really as enabling those who are on the ground there to then continue these things. So yes, there are KPIs. At the same time, I mean, I'm a Qual scholar. I think Georg also is a permanent Qual scholar. We are also very hesitant because obviously things, not all things that are good can be measured, right? And oftentimes it is, I mean, the radio, for instance, forecast, broadcast at radio, we don't know whether that has an impact, right? And how many people then change their behavior. So a lot of these things cannot be measured, but we try to keep a track and institutionalize beyond our own engagement.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Camilo. I come from Mexico, so I'm very interested in your visit to Mexico. If you can send, or where can I get more information about that next visit? And I have a social project. We use open hardware and open software, and we bring education to rural Mayan villages without internet access. So is there a way we can find a way to collaborate with an institute, maybe or how can we do that? Thank you.
I give a quick answer, yes, yes, and yes, and you can then do the
Yes, you can. Basically, when you go to our website, there's also a live ticker on the activities that are going on in the SET project specifically. And yeah, feel free to reach out also after the conference. And maybe there's some format where we can collaborate. So it would be interesting.
More questions? Yeah. We'll gather them first.
Hi, my name is Jacob Zwiers. I used to be a scientist, but at the moment I work for the Berlin Development Agency. My question is, with your project, with your approach, you put a very, very intense question up front when it comes to what is actually the functionality of science itself. So my question would be, where do you see the limitations of what I would call engaged science, because you are very, and maybe too much into it, and in the thick of it.
I will first get some more questions.
So my name is Thomas Happenow. I'm from the Accenture Development Partnerships Program here in Germany. And I would be curious to understand your view on the gig economy. You mentioned the example in Ghana. Because it's a way of embedding local workers into international value chains. So what's your assessment on the long-term positive or negative impact for sustainable structural development of similar countries? Thank you.
Another question we can already address now? No, okay, then I hand back to you.
Thank you. So I'll address your question because this is something I actually write about, and there's a huge debate in academia on engaged scholarship. Andrew Vanderven, who just died, wrote a book on engaged scholarship. Hoffman wrote a book on the engaged scholar. So this is a topic which is quite hot right now, right? What's the role of an academic in these things? And I mean, when we teach, obviously we teach students, like you are, when they do participant observation, you observe. The moment you engage, you also, I mean, you infiltrate, you shape the field itself, right? You might shape and put your own biases on this, right? So all these things are important, right? Especially in a global context, right? Who are we in the moment you obviously even enter, right? So if you enter a field, your identity is something which is seen, and all that has an impact, right? Like, so if we go to the global south and we look white, for instance, or whatever, then that has an impact on maybe how people converse, right? So for a qualitative scholar, for scholars generally, all these things have to be considered. Some of them can be trained, as in like with ethnographic scholarship. Others are just there by, I guess, by situation, right? And then what I've written a piece on contextual expertise where I try to argue for like bringing in other scholars, etc., and certain methods. But I guess my quick response is, on the other side though, what I like about engaged scholarship is that we are not just sitting back and watch, but actually co-create, right? And so it creates a lot of new tensions, but I think there's also a lot of power behind that. And the challenge for that on the other side, though, is it is still very much delegitimized by the field. So within academia, so I mean, my PhD students, for instance, with them, it's a very careful process, because in academia itself, it's still something which is doesn't have the same legitimacy as distant positivist scholarship.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question. And I think it's a good one. However, I mean, Ali in the beginning showed the slide with all the people who work in the Innovation Entrepreneurship Research Group. And so this particular question was kind of more coordinated by Fabian Stefani, who's like a leading expert on the gig economy, especially online gig work. And I'm more than happy to connect you two, because I think it's I can't really answer this question conclusively or in regard.
Then I think we are now 1 minute over time. So I will close this session. Thank you very much. Also, thank you for your questions, and have a great rest of Bits and Bäume.